overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
And Glory G did a beautiful revealing service at our revealing service, and she was quoting Lao Tzu. And Lao Tzu, the corrupt quote is, he who can practice perfect inaction, everything gets done. And so we're not the doer. And to practice inaction means to stop and to rest as that very presence that we are, and then to notice how this presence knows how to express. Having said that, I was very challenged this morning to get on a Zoom call, and thanks to my dad, my daughter, my niece, and Glory G, they got me on the Zoom, Raul, and I had to go and join a special thing and cut and paste, and we did it right down to the last minute. You talk about performance anxiety, and right before I was supposed to go on, it kicked in. And I thought, holy cow, this is like a miracle. And yet, I embraced it. I didn't run away from it, thanks to, and you know, we're here to help each other walk each other home. Some people have skill doing something, some people don't. I'm going to probably talk to my neighbor, Chris, because he works for Pella Windows, and we noticed that all the windows are being destroyed by the sparrows. So after the sparrows make their nests and they're all happy and the little chicks have left their nests, then we'll reconsider how to restore this place back to balance. And so what if we are in this beautiful dance of life to find a way to navigate in a loving way? My beloved Emily over here, who's a school teacher, she talked about educating the soul of the children. Now, how many teachers will talk about educating the soul of the children, knowing that the soul wants to be liberated, it wants to be free, it wants to sing and dance. It doesn't want to be controlled and molded into some image of what the world would have it be acceptable, but rather it wants to be revealed, almost like a flower will bloom when it's ready to bloom. So could we use this same kind of courtesy on our spiritual growth? A friend in the revealing service was reflecting on having gone to many different churches growing up. I as well went to, my parents were church shoppers par excellence. We studied with the Unitarians for quite a while, and I remember they gave us a very academic approach to spirituality. They segmented it, and we began to study the Buddhist teachings and the Jewish teachings, and that was fine and good, but for a little kid like me who was a synthesizer, and Ernest Holmes was a synthesizer, he recognized that truth is incontrovertible. When you can find that thread of truth amidst all the many doctrines, then something hears it. And it's that same something that's already there that wakes up from within. The Buddhists call it the Buddha consciousness. It's not the man Siddhartha Gautama. It's this awakened presence that's always there. And when conditions are right, it wakes up within us. And it begins to know certain things. It doesn't amass a great amount of information, but it has this inner knowing that provides it with the courage then to take the next step, knowing that you're not the doer, but something in you, we'll call it the soul, is using us for a higher purpose. So could we surrender into that mystery of belonging to the universe, and then realize that everything is a gospel and everything is preaching to us? I was sitting at my desk on this Zoom call that my daughter got me into, thank God. And right in front of me was a little quote from Muir. What's his first name? John Muir, the environmentalist?
Yes.
Yes. And he says, everything seems to be separate in this world, only to realize that everything is interconnected. So here's this great mystic saying, we're all part of one another. It was Richard Rohr in this beautiful book, Spiritual Ecology, this Franciscan monk, that talks about creation itself is the body of the Christ. Creation itself. He said Christ wasn't Jesus' last name. Now, is that too big of an idea? He would ask the world to consider the cosmic Christ revealed in creation itself. And then Richard Rohr says, even before humanity came on this planet, the cosmic Christ was existing within all creation, within the dinosaurs and the trees. And he says, and this cosmic Christ wasn't a Christian Christ or a Jewish Christ or a Muslim Christ. It was this universal Christ. He says, is that too big of an awareness to wrap yourselves around? The longer I'm in these teachings of truth, I find myself saying, I don't want content anymore. I want context. Now, to explain that to you, context would be the ocean of love. The content would be the wave. And we can see ourselves as the wave of love. Yes, we're all beautiful little waves. There's the Emily wave and the Michael wave. But what if we knew we were the ocean of love itself? And there's just one ocean. That's the context. Or we might think we're this. I loved what Locke Kelly said. I used to think of myself, content versus context, as this nice fluffy cloud in the sky. And my job was to keep my cloud nice and white and fluffy so that everyone could admire it. And then he says, one day I realized, holy cow, I'm the sky. I'm not the cloud. And then that context of realizing I am this awake awareness. And in that, thoughts arise. Thoughts are like clouds. Emotions arise. They're like clouds as well. Now, what comes first, the emotion or the thought? There's a little mind game you can play with yourself, but I'll give you the answer. It's always the thought that triggers the emotion. Oftentimes, it's an unconscious thought pattern that we didn't realize that we were thinking. So in my little Zen calendar, and it's like a little oracle for me the other day, it said silence occurs not when there is no noise outside, but silence occurs when there is no self with a little s inside. Because it's this finite self that wails and suffers, all at the same time as there is this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose. So yesterday on the Zen calendar, it affirmed that. It said, suffering is necessary in life until you realize it isn't necessary. Some people just like to suffer. And they hold on to their long suffering. They usually have a little Velcro thing on their hand, and they put this one, and then they put this one, and then they put this one, until you realize, I don't need to suffer anymore. Now, this morning on the Zen calendar, it said, if there is breath, there is a new beginning. How painfully simple is that? So could we rest as breath itself? Breath is another name for spirit. So if we can identify ourselves as an eternal spirit, one that was never born and never dies, well, then it takes everything out of content into context, that we are an eternal life that was never born and never dies. You talk about pomp and circumstance, Sylvia. We had Prince Philip's service there in England, and I found myself watching it, not focusing on the man, Prince Philip, but noticing that this was an archetypal memorial service for all, maybe those who've died of the COVID-19. I thought of the 500,000 Americans plus who've made their transition. And the reverence, and there was a moment during that service where there was a moment, a whole minute of silence, and they stood there holding his body, and I'm thinking, how can they keep holding him up in the air? My shoulders were hurting watching them hold him. And in that silence, and then they walked up the step, one step at a time. You talk about pomp and circumstance, and they laid him to rest. And then when the man came up to preach this gospel, it was all relating to the finite Philip in heaven with Jesus instead of this greater something. And I found myself translating it as how I would probably do the memorial service, saying that he was never born and he never died and he's still here with us. And this man who was 99, close to being 100 years old, I saw as this young, beautiful military man in the Navy, who pursued a very young princess, soon to be queen. And I felt that young Philip, as well as the aged Philip, still here with us. So could we step into a different way of seeing life? You know, in the spiritual ecology that I'm exploring this month, I talked about Sandra Ingerman yesterday, who is a shamanic teacher. And she says, in the shaman tradition, they regard everything out here as the matote, which is the dream. And she says, each of us is dreaming the world into existence. And then she falls back into this truth taught by Hermes Trismegistus 2,000 years before Christ. In fact, that's where the Hermetic teachings come from. And it was Moses himself who aligned himself with the Hermetic teachings. And one of the great ones is, as within, so without, as above, so below. Any gardener knows if you want a beautiful plant on the top, you have to have a beautiful root system down below. So that's why you're always taking your house plants and moving them into bigger pots, because if you want a healthier plant, you got to have a healthier pot. Now, could we apply that to our own self? Could we have a healthier inside? And then when we do, we have a healthier way of relating to the world. The world is always going to be in chaos. It's going to be in change. It's inevitable. Change is a constant. But can we embrace that change with a smile on our face and a song in our hearts? That's why we're teaching that lovely class of Pema Chodron's, living beautifully with uncertainty and change. Uncertainty and change are the name of the game. And when people are in change and they're in uncertainty, she says they feel a groundlessness. There's nowhere to stand. Where am I going? And you can see all this violence that's out picturing on the planet. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. And if we don't have a healthy inside, well, then we could do have mass shootings. You see crazy people out there doing these things because they don't have a healthy inside. So could we make a commitment? And I love in this class, she says, they're called the three vows in Buddhism, but she turned a vow into a commitment. And I love the word commitment. It comes from the Latin word comitare, which means to circle around something that you deeply care about. Sylvia was committed to Joe. Could we be committed? I'm committed to my old dog Bert. Every day, it's a blessing. I lift him up and down those stairs. I'm wondering, he got out yesterday. I left the gate open, and he waddled out, and he's in the neighbor's yard, and she screamed because she says, oh, my God, Bert's skin and bones. What happened to Bert? And they said, but he's still walking. You know, I know he's old. He's 16 years old. In humans, that would be 104 or something like that. But he's still here with us every day. So today, we found that he found a new thing that he likes to eat. He's actually eating out of his bowl again. So light springs eternal. Could we cling to those moments where life is showing us a new way to see things? Let me give you a taste of Richard Rohr in this book. Bless you. He talks about creation out here as the body of God. It's all God. Is that too big of an idea for you? The trees, the flowers, the hummingbirds. I was talking to my prayer partner in Vancouver, British Columbia, and he lives on a sailboat in the middle of the harbor. And he says, as I look outside my sailboat, he says, you know what a mast looks like, don't you? He says, kind of like a crucifix. And on the center of the mast was the radar thing. And he says, sitting on that little radar thing was a great heron. You know the great heron with the long? He says, but the great heron is all squished up into a little ball, and his head, his long head is pulled into his feathers. And he said, I am resting in the peace of the heron as we move into this spiritual mind treatment together, knowing that everything is the body of God is the creation of spirit. Richard Rohr, Franciscan monk, is saying the same thing. And here's how he puts it in his beautiful, outrageous way. I don't know how he's still in the Catholic Church rebel. My friend Terry Shea, who was once a monk, he said they should have thrown him out long ago. He says, creation is the body of God. And he says, and we all breathe the same air and we all drink the same water. He says it's not Jewish water or Christian water or Muslim air or different versions of the elements. He says we're all drinking the same spirit. And so he says, I know it is no longer words or doctrines or mental belief systems that can or will reveal the fullness of the cosmic Christ. You're not going to get it at the Catholic Church or the Baptist Church down there. You have to find it all around you, he's saying. He says, this earth indeed is the very body of God. And it is from this body that we are born, that we live, we suffer, and we resurrect to eternal life. Now, I thought it was interesting that my first talk on this month was called The Resurrection Principle, because it was Easter Sunday. Could we take it out of an event that happened 2,000 years ago and talk about it as something that is dying in us and awakening in us at the same time? Dying to a belief system that somehow you were born in sin and an abomination in God's eyes. That idea never made sense even as a little kid. I've got the sins of my father, and he was quite a sinner. So as a little kid, I thought, holy cow, I'm cursed to burn in hell. That's what they would tell me. And that was fakakta. It's not true. So could we discern what isn't true, let that go, or just let it be, and then cling to only that which resonates with our heart? That's why I love what Mary and Terry said. They had to find a spirituality that was loving, that was inclusive, not exclusive, that was mysteriously simple and profound in that simplicity. Ta tuam asi, thou art that. All there is that. That means you're it. What am I? You're that. What is that? Emptiness, out of which all form arises. Well, it's kind of crazy to live as emptiness. In the Buddhist teaching of emptiness is you're empty of the local self, of the me person. My friend Bill Savoy said, I'm playing with this man and I found a we because there is no I, but we can find this we where we come together. We come together in this moment. We bind our hearts as one, for we all form a family made out of one, you know, one presence, one life, one breath, and that breath is breathing us. You begin to play with this and you feel your way into the truth. You can't think your way into it. It's not a knowledge thing. I'm a very smart guy. It's not a knowledge thing. It's a heart thing. So when the head is in service to the heart, because the heart knows oneness, whereas the head wants to get caught up in duplicitous thinking, right and wrong, answers versus problems, heart doesn't do that. Heart doesn't see it as a problem. Heart always sees it as an opportunity to be creative. The heart sees it as an opportunity to surrender. I don't know what to do with Bert, but I know that the heart does. And I just love on him. And the love has such amazing energy. You know, Matt will appreciate this. Bert has what they call ODS, old dog syndrome. And about 4 years ago, he collapsed on the trails at Monte Sano. We thought that was it. He got up, did it. Another time, he collapsed again. We thought that was it. I called Lady Jane. She lived down the street from me. And I said, Jane, Bert's collapsed again. He's not moving. If you want to come and say goodbye to him, maybe this is it. So Jane came over to the house and she walked in the kitchen and Bert got up. It was like the resurrection. And he ran over to Jane. I said, Jane, you just brought my dog back to life. So miracles do happen. Miracles do happen and he's still here. Yes, so Richard Rohr. This earth indeed is the very body of God, and it is from this body that we're born, that we live, we suffer, and we resurrect into eternal life. We're eternal beings. Tessa is still here. So could we get over the idea that we're finite beings with a perishable date and start connecting to our eternal soul? I've been asked next Sunday to speak with a young minister. It's called Conversations with Keith. And he was a student, as I was 35, 40 years ago, in the Atlanta Center. We had the same teacher. And we haven't really spoken. You mentioned 7 years ago. It's 30-some years ago for him and me. And in the conversation, I'm going to ask him, do you feel the presence of our teacher in you? Because I feel him all the time. They say, Thich Nhat Hanh says, the ancestors live in you. And the expectations of the ancestors live in you. And so my teacher, who kind of transmitted himself to me, he says, don't accept ignorance and stupidity. He said, always stand up to that and speak from truth. And he was, he would say things outrageous, like you can't get the shaft unless you assume the position. That would shock people, but it woke them up. So could we direct our consciousness to a greater order of being? Richard Rohr is doing the same thing in his own beautiful way. He says, either all is God, God's perfect great project, or we may rightly wonder whether anything is God. He said, it's either all God or it's not God at all. A Franciscan monk saying that. And he's still in the monk. So at the end of this little essay, he says, we can do better and we must do better as a species. And he said, and by God's patient grace, we will do better. That's an affirmation, isn't it, Sylvia? By God's patient grace, we will do better. And once we recognize that it is one shared creation and that we are all a part of it for better or worse, then we can navigate not as separate selves, not as better than or less than, but we're all, there's an equanimity here. God doesn't have a religion, you know? It wasn't just Jesus that was the only begotten. As Meister Eckhart said, the only begotten is ever begetting itself in each one of us right now. Could we know that for everyone? You know, then. And his last sentence is, I do still believe that grace is inherent. Now, grace is the unmerited givingness of the universe to its creation. Unmerited means you don't have to earn it by doing good deeds. Whoever you are, by right of consciousness, this grace is there for you. Sometimes the grace appears in the greatest suffering. I've noticed that when people are truly suffering, that's when grace shows up. So he says, I do believe that grace is inherent in all creation and that God and goodness will still have the final word. God, in her goodness, will still have the final word. He said, by God's patient grace, we will do better. And the cosmic Christ will come alive then in the world. By the grace of God, we'll do better. So could we take that as a kind of an invitation to just do better in the way we navigate with the simplest little things? God doesn't know great or small. It's on how you chop the vegetables. It's how you play a game of chess. It's how you are with your puppy. It's how you are with those kids when they come to you. I remember when my husband was a school teacher, he realized, I'm not here to teach them anything. I'm here to be a space of love for them. And when they come in, oftentimes from broken homes, he's there to smile at them and to know that you're embraced here, you're seen here. Not that you're... And when he worked in a private school where every kid was privileged, he said when he came to that inner city school where the kids were more disadvantaged, he said it was so much more meaningful because they really needed someone who cared about them. So yeah, so what if the universe will put us where we need to be so that we can experience the way we can offer our gift from soul to soul? So thank you, Richard, for helping us, or maybe confusing us a little bit. I'd like to be confused because we're not here to have answers. We're here to stay in the question. And you know, the mind is 10 times more active in the question than when you have an answer. So could we rest in the question? You know, what is mind to do? And then the doing comes out of being. So I hear that all the time. Yes, I want to do something, but could it come from that place where my wholeness is the doer? My peaceful, calm place is the doer. My soul itself, I know that this is here for us and not against us. It was my prayer partner this morning that shared that he had a relationship that fell apart like an ex, and they decided they were going to try to have a friendship. And so they got together after several years to see if a friendship was sustainable. And he says there was so much unhealed stuff still within that after one day on the sailboat, he realized, I can't do this. And he says, what a beautiful breakthrough for you, because you recognize there are still unhealed issues within that need to be resolved before this friendship can be achieved. So what if it's not good or bad? It's just the dance that we're doing. So the first week I spoke about have your own resurrection. Last week I spoke about this is it, which is this wonderful Buddhist idea that this is it. This is the life that you've been given. Could we embrace it as it is and not say it should be better? If it looked this way, I would like my life. What if it's the life that you've been given with all of its challenges? And I've come to realize that those challenges are sacred. And we're doing this wonderful class, Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change. And in the three commitments, the first one is to do no harm. Do no harm to yourself or to others' people. You know, I hear Moses who said, the words in your mouth, a blessing or a curse, according to how you use it. So if you go around unconsciously saying things like, oh, life sucks, and nobody appreciates me, and nobody loves me, and da-da-da-da-da, you're actually creating that dream for yourself. So could we be impeccable with our word and affirm that life is beautiful and it's an unfoldment from the soul, and then start to feel into that, you know, that life is here for me. And even the challenge that comes my way. The second commitment we make is the Bodhisattva commitment to help one another. You know, when you help somebody, you're really helping yourself. All I ever do is for me because it's all me. Every time I water a plant, I'm helping myself. Every time I help the little bird with the nest, I'm helping myself. This morning I was sitting at the breakfast table and I saw a little bunny rabbit, a baby bunny rabbit, hopping down the path. And I said, oh, honey, you want to come and see the bunny rabbit? He's so cute. And he said, oh, he'll get eaten. He's too little. He'll probably get eaten. I said, no, honey, we don't have to think that way. He's a bunny rabbit. He's chewing on the hosta leaves. He'll be fine as he's bouncing back the path. You see how the mind wants to just go into some kind of conclusion. The last commitment, Pema Chodron, is the hardest one, and it's my favorite one. It says, embrace life just as it is. Don't push it away. Always lean into what is. Even if it's uncomfortable, she says, lean into what's uncomfortable. We were talking about the shadow work in our revealing service. Sometimes the shadow will come up if you don't create space for it. So what if we could let the shadow arise and bring the light of love to the shadow? And then when the shadow arises and the light illuminates it, the shadow has a way of just dissipating. And in a strange sort of way, it says, I've been here for you all along. So then when Thich Nhat Hanh would say, my fear arises, he would say, oh, there you are, my little fear. Could I embrace that part? My prayer partner was saying that when he had this experience a week ago with the ex-friend, he said what came up for him was just, and he's 73 years old. He said, I felt just bucket loads of shame coming up. And you know, shame comes from when you're a childhood and something happens in your childhood. So I said, can you see that shadow part of the shame arising so that it can be met with love? That's what we get to do when this stuff arises in our life. That's the third commitment. So whatever arises, love that. Whatever arises, love that. Whatever arises, love that. And then you're not in resistance to life. you know, Terry and Mary have got construction worker Shempa. And I've been there so many times. That's why we move out of the city when the Shempa's going on, so we don't have to face it. Then the Shempa can be there, but we're not reacting to it. The title of today's talk is Time is a Garden. And I love working with the idea of time because time is an illusion. I mean, Albert Einstein taught that. It's relative, as he would say. So when time collapses, then we fall into eternity. So he's inviting us to see time as a garden. And you know, as a gardener, you know that I've got some really old trees, maybe hundreds of years old. I've got little seedlings, maybe 2 weeks old. And the gardener is tending the seedling as well as he's tending the old tree, that they all work simultaneously. And so my beautiful friend Joanne lost a couple of her pine trees, but the pines are still there, they're just not in form. Now it sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? I was telling Joanne I have an old tree named Ethel, and the city decided she was compromised, that she was hollow. And so she was huge right in the front yard, and they took down Ethel. It was Lucy and Ethel, and Lucy's still there, and Ethel's this big stump. And so rather than the city grinding her down, I said, no, please leave Ethel's stump because I want to remember her. And on my birthday, Trey went out to Brooks and Collier and brought me a pig, a nice big fat pig. I don't know if that's supposed to be symbolic, but anyway. And we named the pig Bethel, and Bethel sits on Ethel. And she came right around the time of the COVID thing. So one of the church people came over and they'd handmade me a mask. Well, my head was too big for the mask. It didn't fit. But it fit perfectly on Bethel. So Bethel got the mask. And when they lifted the mandate, or I think it was when we had our second shot, Trey went out and he took the mask off Bethel. And so, you know, you learn to deal. So every time I look around, I see her. And you know what's so funny? We had a dog named Baby Speck. And you'll see her out in the thing. She's drinking out of the water bowl with Bert. And I feel her presence all the time. And every Sunday morning, we go to what we call Fireman's Field. And that's where we used to go when she was a puppy. And every time we pull into Fireman's Field, I see her frolicking in the field. And I said, Trey, do you see her? He says, yeah, I see her. And she used to run down because the muskrats lived under the ground by the culvert. And she'd run over and look for the muskrats. And I see her little nose sticking down there. And even they had this huge thing where the city has the cement things and the water flows in it. I don't know what they call that. It's really steep. When she was a puppy, she fell down into the culvert. And I wasn't there, thank God. And he was telling me today how he still, every time he sees that culvert, he sees her fall down the culvert. And somehow he managed to save her. So time is an illusion. And could we be there? Let me hear how Mark Nepo, he made his transition. He didn't make it. He had cancer twice, nearly died. And he came back with a different way of seeing things. And so he wrote this little poem called Time is a Garden. He said, things that matter take time to root, and meaning takes time to blossom. I remember when I was a brand new student of truth, I wanted the truth and I wanted it now. And my teacher reminded me, just as a flower takes time before it flowers and bears fruit, our lives take time before, because we have to purge ourselves of an old belief system. And so many of us were given one. And then we're in the void. And then in that void, you've created a space. Be very careful what you let fill that system. And that takes time, he's saying. So this illusion of time is not so much an illusion. Though we forget, time is a garden in which each of us is a seed breaking surface when we're born. Sylvia has a great grandchild that's coming up, and she's a little seed in the belly of her granddaughter. And he's saying, what if we could see ourselves as this potential? You know, there's a word called entelechy, which says, in the acorn lies the wisdom of the oak tree. Within the pear seed lies the wisdom of the pear tree. And within the God seed, within each one of us, lies the wisdom of God. So could we see the seed of our potential, the seed of our soul, when you work with those little children, nurture that seed of their beauty, of their creativity? She says, like it or not, a deep part of our journey is to stay engaged in life long enough for truth to show itself to us. Now, the Greek word for truth is that which unhides itself. Could we wait long enough, like Chris Meadows did, for all of a sudden the truth to unhide itself? He and his beloved wife watch us on YouTube. And I remember once he said over the garden gate, he says, thanks for your wisdom. I said, well, it's not my wisdom. It's just the truth. And when the truth wakes up, it wants to express itself. It doesn't want to impress the world. It wants to express truth. So he says, the truth will show itself when we're ready. And in spite of how we race for tomorrow, time speaks by how things grow, change, and evolve around us. I was reading Henry David Thoreau, who said, "Time is a stream that I go fishing in. And as I look in the stream, I realize how shallow it is to the bottom. But then I look above and I see eternity out there, and the stars are calling me to know my true nature." So what if we could see time as there's the past, which is just an illusion, which is just a memory. There is the future, which hasn't happened. It's a fantasy. And then Thoreau says, could we live in that eternal now moment? And he was kind of outrageous, and I loved how he really irritated a lot of people. They would ask him for his time, and he would say, "You can ask me for money, but don't ask for my afternoons." He says, because time is the most valuable possession I have. So could we cherish those moments and take time to just stop and to be? My little daughter, Terry, over there, instead of I'm running around doing, can I just stop and rest as awareness and observe the grace of life itself? It's all grace. It's all the givingness of spirit to its creation. So he says, like it or not, a deep part of the journey is to wait for truth to show up. And in spite of how we race for our tomorrows, time speaks by how things grow, change, and evolve around us. If you're not changing and evolving, you're not doing it correctly. You know, I continue to evolve 33 years in ministry, and I'm still growing and evolving out of the way we used to think of things. When I was a brand new religious science minister, they used to say, affirm what you want and deny what you don't want. We even had 7 steps of treatment, and there was the denial step in that. Well, when you deny something, you in a strange sort of way, you give it power. So what if it's not about denying it, but bringing it in and say, oh, I see it. It's just a pattern of consciousness. It may be fear, anxiety, judgment. And I think so much of what happened in early days of my ministry was we had so many ministers that denied the psychological approach. They denied the shadow, if you will. And you have to embrace the shadow if you're going to know the light. So he's saying evolve. I think the word is, there's a line in horticulture, grow or die. And in order to grow, you have to evolve. Ernest Holmes talks about involution and evolution. You expand within here, and then the world desperately needs to evolve into a greater order of seeing oneness instead of seeing otherness. So she's saying the same thing, Mark Niebuhr. And when we can stop and open our heart, then poetry lets us enter time and not just move through it. We want to enter into the moment and not just see these moments as passing moments, but have eternal moments. You know, when I hold Bird in my arms, it's an eternal moment. I'm holding his big head in my hands, and I'm looking into those big, soft eyes of his. And I've been told acupuncture-wise, if you play with their ears, it calms them down. So I find myself going around the edges of his ears and squeezing his lily. When I see Chris holding Trey in his arms, not my husband, but his cat Trey, I see this beautiful intimacy of this cat and this human being. Same thing. When we can stop and open our hearts, poetry lets us enter time, not just move through time. And when we can enter time, this is the eternal now moment, and I want Gigi to hear this. When we enter time, we find that eternity is the experience of all life in any given moment and not an endless stacking of years. Time is not the 72 years that I've been here. It's an eternity unfolding, 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 and it was that way when we were young, and it's that way when we're middle age, it's that way until the very last moment. We are eternity experiencing this illusion of time. So he says, mysteriously, when we can stop and open, then the past, the present, and the future are always before us. That's why I can see baby speck everywhere. That's why I can look at Bethel on Ethel, and Ethel's still here, just like your pine trees, Joanne. They're just not here in form. And then it's kind of a strange kind of feeling, isn't it? You know, I feel my teacher always here, reminding me to continue to evolve and don't get stuck in a way that think you've arrived in some kind of finite belief system, but to stay open and teachable, like Sandra Ingerman said. I asked Lori G on our satsang. Sandra Ingerman says, we have to dare to dream a new dream. I dreamed a dream of long ago where we could all come together as one life. Could we have a bigger dream? To see the cosmic Christ awakening within us and then see it awakening all around you. You can't see the cosmic Christ out there if you haven't found the cosmic Christ in here. Remember, as within, so without. So could we put our attention on that and just listen for it and allow it and say, yes, I am ready. Do with this life as you will. We had a song that we used to sing, use me, O God, I stand for you and here I'll abide as you show me all that I must do. Command my hands. What must they do? Gigi likes that. Command the soul. It's here for you. God is the love that makes all creation, and it moves through its creation, and we are that. That requires total surrendering to that something that's greater. It's the wave saying to the ocean, okay, ocean of love, use this wave. Use this wave to shine your light in the world. Mysteriously, when we can stop and open, the past, present, and future are always before us, and they're speaking as one unnameable energy. One unnameable energy. So when we see an old woman in the streets, it's entering time that lets us see her as a young woman too. Huh. Enter time and inhabit wonder. Every time I've been at the deathbed of someone who's seemingly old, I see them as a young person who just got older. They're just a little boy and a little girl in an older body, and they need to be loved, just as the child. When my teacher had the brain tumor, he was, I think, 70 years old. His mother died in childbirth. And so he used to cynically say, you know, you never miss what you never had, David. Well, it turns out he really did need, and at the end of his life, when people would try to teach principle, speak principle, all he did was cry. He became like a little boy. And he'd say, I don't need you to tell me things. I need you to hold me. He just wanted to be held like a baby. So, could we learn from his example? And then he said to me, because it's the science of mind, this teaching, and he used to disparage people from hugging. He says, we are not a hugging church. He did not, remember, he couldn't do intimacy because he didn't have a mother. He didn't know how to do intimacy. And then he says, David, you have to tell them I was wrong. He said, it's all about the love. It's all about the love. So how can you know the love if you've run away from the love your whole life? So the invitation is for each one of us to see the illusion of time. And when we see the illusion of time, well, then it all kind of collapses into this beautiful dance of awareness. You know, then when my little boy should come up, who I've exiled out of shame, I can love him. So I don't have to wait till the final moment when I have to say to Emily, my little boy needs to be held. It's so funny, when I went to Colorado after the heart attack, he showed up. And they instructed us, if this part of an exiled part of you shows up, ask them what they want. And so I went to this little boy that showed up. He was like 6 years old. And I said, what do you want? And he said, I just want to be held. Well, I'm not going to go to 100 people and say, will you hold me or will you hold me? So what I did, same thing I did when I was 6, I ran out into the forest and I held the tree. And I held that tree. I called it Grandfather Tree. And then I realized I wasn't holding the tree was holding me. And so then I said to Grandfather Tree, I said, I can't take you with me. I asked if I could take one of his twigs on the ground. So I picked up the twig and there were bugs on the twig. And I said, no, the bugs belong with the twig. That's its home. But then it's as if the Grandfather Tree said, but you can have this stone. You can carry the stone. And so I picked up the stone, and the whole time in that 7-day retreat, the stone was holding me. Yeah, so that's the cosmic Christ. It's within creation. And when you stop identifying with your chronological age, then you can get into, in Greek, they call it chronos and kairos. Kairos is eternal time, and chronos is chronological time. And what we've done is we've identified with chronological time. You know, how old are you? But kairos is eternal time. We are eternal beings at whatever age you find yourself. Then, you know, then we get to see life in a whole different way. Since I've been talking about life and death, I went to my favorite oracle on death, and that's my beloved John O'Donohue. He died at age 52 in his sleep, and he spoke about death a lot at the end, and he talked about how we don't die. He quoted Meister Eckhart that says, where do you think you go? You think you're going out there somewhere in the clouds? He says, you're still here. You're not in your form. And he says, and when we can see death as a part of life, instead of death as something separate, life was never born and life never dies. But yet there is something that's born. It's the body. And there's something that dies. It's the body. And he has this beautiful way of taking you out of chronological time into this eternal now moment in his Irish sort of way. It's a little class I taught called Beauty. And it's the kind of book that just keeps on giving and giving and giving. He says, if we could see time as a circle, we might be better able to see how birth and death belong within the one embrace. Life is a circle that has no beginning and has no end. Beloved Jane is still with us, you know. Could we see it as the circle? And he says, and when we think of birth and death together, death begins to lose its terror as an unknown abyss where the intimacy of a life is erased. We stop being afraid of death because life never died. And if the light and the beauty of who we are was dreamed and created in the realm before death, before birth, I mean, wow, that we were dreamed into existence by something. You know, it's so funny. My grandfather, on my father's side, his name was David Leonard. And he died at age 45, about 2 years before I was born. And he died on a dance floor with another woman, not his wife, in his arms. He had a massive heart attack, probably like the one I had. He was 45. He didn't survive. And my mother said he was the most loving man she ever met. And he gave her a little book when he was alive, and it was Emily Cady's Lessons in Truth. Now that's a New Thought gospel in the Unity Church. And my mother gave it to me when I became a minister. She said, your grandfather gave it to me. She said, you're so much like him. And in that holy instant, I think, maybe I came back as him to fulfill whatever his soul wanted to do. You know, I think crazy thoughts like that. Because if there is no death, he needed another go around and he used this body for it. So when we think of birth and death together, death begins to lose its terror as an unknown abyss where the intimacy of life is erased. And instead, the light and beauty of who we are was dreamed and created in the realm before our birth. And then death is surely bringing us home to the house of our eternal belonging. Death is bringing us home to the house of our eternal belonging. That's what I wanted them to say about Prince Philip. He's not gone. He's just returning back to that beautiful place. And here's how John O'Donohue talks about that place of belonging. And if everything we are is a gift from the home of dream, then our return will be celebrated, will be a celebration of all that has awakened and realized and lived in this life. We're realizing, you know, that's why the first step of treatment is recognition, recognizing that there's this power everywhere in the universe, this presence. The second step of treatment is to unify with that. If it's everything, ta toi ma si, thou art that, well, then it's operating within me. And then the third step is to realize, well, knowing that I am that, well, then what would that holy presence realize as me? First of all, it would realize that it's not about David. It's about that presence. And could I be humble enough to experience the vastness of that? He's saying the same thing in his own Irish way. And if everything we are is a gift from the home of the dream, then our return will be a celebration of all that we've awakened to, realized, and lived in this lifetime that we've been given. He says, there may be a silent dimension of the heart, which through all the years has never forgotten where it came from. Now, when I read something like that, I just touch my heart. There is a silence in the heart that remembers. In the Sufi tradition, they talk about forgetting and remembering. Could we remember who we are? That we are divine love expressing. You know how humble you have to be to say that? Could we remember? Try to remember this presence within us. Last week, I talked about Mark Nepo, and he talked about the fifth season of life. Now, you know we have four seasons out there. So the fifth season is when you get to a place where you're no longer grasping, and you're no longer pushing away, but you're resting in the eternal now moment. That's the fifth season. And then I loved what Joanne said, I'm enjoying getting older. You can enjoy getting older when you realize spirit doesn't age. Spirit's eternally young. Sylvia is, I think, a little older than me, but she's still that young thing that I met 33 years ago, who was on her honeymoon, madly in love. She hasn't changed a day for me. Not a few gray hairs, but you know, that's to be expected. Caught between the shadowing and the brightening of our days, we can have no clear view. Yet our glimpses of the eternal world would suggest that it is not a matter of infinite quantity so much as it is a pure refinement of presence. A refinement of presence within you. Could we look through the eyes of God? Wheresoe'er I look, I see the face of God. That's God looking and seeing itself mirrored in the world. Now, if everywhere I look, I see myself reflected, well, then there's an awful lot of David there. But when you get to this place where you're no longer seeing yourself and you're seeing this radiant light shining, I can see the smile under Emily's mask just about better than anybody. And it just comes right through her eyes. So could we do the same with the presence? It's a refinement, he says, of the presence. And lastly, he says, time opens and then the eternal unfolds. Time opens, it's no longer this linear time, and then the eternal is exposed. Isn't that fun? Time is a garden. Time is a garden. So let's breathe into that present moment awareness. And like the Zen calendar said this morning, if you're breathing, there is always a new beginning. because the breath doesn't talk about past breaths that it has breathed, nor does it think about future breaths that it will breathe. But it's fully engaged in this current breath that is breathing us. And so when we go fishing in the stream called time, and we go deeply into that linear time, we find, just like the symbol of the cross, we end at that center point where the past is merely a memory, the future is some kind of fantasy in the mind, but the present moment is fully there as presence itself. And it is breathing, it is beginning, and it is fully formed. Rumi says, what you think of love are but subtle degrees of domination and servitude. He says, but true love comes fully formed like the moonlight in the window. Now that image for me is one of stopping and entering into that moonlight in the window that doesn't talk about previous moonlights or future moonlights, but it's fully formed and it comes through the consciousness of our being to remind us that we are that. That's what love is, an unconditional presence that flows effortlessly through grace. But it does require that we evolve into it so that it might have its way with us. And so we rest as that beautiful presence, giving it space so that we might grow in spirit and in truth, so that we might evolve and ultimately flower as an expression of our soul and ultimately bear fruit through our life experience, whatever that might mean for you. I hear scripture that says, this is the day the Lord has made. Rejoice and be glad in it. And so that would be the third commitment. I embrace this day just as it is. I open to the truth as it awakens within. A truth that was never born, a truth that never dies, but a truth that sets us free. And so as we know the truth about life, then we're free of the concept of death, because eternity was never born and eternity never dies. And so then we can embrace death. Death is only to an idea, perhaps. Death to a construct of the mind. Death to a dream of yesterday, as Sandra Ingram would say. And then opening to the birth of a new dream. A dream that existed in the mind of God, if you will. And so through humbly listening, we allow that dream to awaken in the imaginal realms, in the non-ordinary consciousness that sees things in images and pictures. We allow for this dream, this liberating dream of soul, of Atman and Brahman. Brahman being the all-creative power of the universe, and the Atman is the soul, which is an aspect of Brahman, and Atman and Brahman are one, as they say in Sanskrit. So the soul within and the soul without are one soul, the oversoul that Emerson spoke about. And so we continue to breathe, and this beginning is always happening, because the breath is always a new beginning. And then we can ask ourselves, is suffering necessary? Or can we say, until we realize that suffering is unnecessary, we don't need it anymore to grow. And then we can smile behind our mask and realize that we're always at choice point. Choose you this day who you will serve, God, this uncreated essence, or mammon, which is the stuff of life. We're always at choice point. And so if you choose to celebrate the God within, I invite you to put your hands over your heart, to that God space, to the cave of the heart wherein God lies, as they say in Sufism. And say to this place, this presence, the one that knows no other, say with me the heart salutation, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of my soul.
The beloved in me
bows to the beloved in you.
The beloved in you.
In this spaciousness, we are one. And then feel the light in your heart and feel it moving up into your eyes and open your eyes and open your heart and open your hands and let your light shine so that it might bring light to the darkness all over the world, because you are that light. And so am I, and so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.